This is a continuation of the interview with Emilio Hernandez on March 22nd. Okay, so you were saying.
Okay. Let me see.
You were talking, I guess, about...
Tektronix,
and you said you were working at the Sunset Building there.
Oh yeah, and well, and then I, from the Sunset Building, I got a new job in cables. Start working on tech and cables.
Over in the main industrial park, then, huh?
No, they had them up there, over at the Sunset plant.
Okay.
And then I worked for about 6 or 8 months. And cables, and I got a job on molding machines over at the main plant. And I got transferred until I hurt myself up there. Mm-hmm. Setting up a die, you know, on a machine. Broke to my wrist, disc and my spine.
Oh boy.
And I had a surgery, and I wasn't too good after that.
You got in the way of the machine, or?
Well, I didn't pick up anything because all the dies on those machines, they were pretty heavy. Mm-hmm. And you had to pick it with a, what they call them? Snatch block, you know? And I used to twist it like this, and bang, that was it.
Oh, yeah. So you injured your back and neck then?
Yeah, real easy, you know. And I sat down, and I blind myself up, and I don't know. Then I called the supervisor, you know, and I told him about it. He said, you better go home, and went home. He said, but if you don't feel too good, he said, you go and see a doctor. I came home and drink a couple of anisins and went to bed. And the next morning, I was feeling pretty good until about 9 or 10 o'clock. Then I started making exercise, and then when I started hurting again, real bad. I went and see a doctor, and he said, well, you got to rough your disc. He said, the only thing is that we can put you some, we can give you some shots. Maybe, he said, it could help you. But I don't think so. The only thing that we can do is, huh? No. Gonna be a surgery. And about a year later, they had surgery, man. Mm-hmm. And I used to go and work for 2-3 hours up at Tektronix and couldn't stand it. The pain. I had to come in and lay down, and it was a terrible. Until the disability, the doctor's disability, man, mm-hmm. from work. And I start working, quit working, and here I am. Uh-huh. I haven't do any. I still have some problem with my back. Mm-hmm. You know.
How long did you work for Tech then?
Well, about 10 years, 11 years. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me then a little bit? You said you were the first family here in Forest Grove.
Yeah.
I guess back in those days, there weren't too many families that were really settled here in the area. Is that?
No, I tell you, the only that I know, we were 4 families in the county.
Uh-huh. Only 4, huh?
4 families in the whole county. It was Hinojosa and Hillsboro, Pete Falcon and Cornelius, and Joe Lopez in Cornelius, and ourselves down here in Forest Grove. Mm-hmm. You know, that was all the families. I remember in the harvester season, they had to shut down the schools to pick up strawberry with school kids. You know.
Oh, because they didn't have enough.
They didn't have enough labor. They didn't have no labor.
Right. But during the summertime, though, I assume even then there were lots of Hispanic people moving in to help with the crops?
No.
Not so many?
No. There was no. We didn't have no. We had some problem with the Mexican food. Couldn't find my period, nothing. We had to go to California to get some, like tortillas, hot pepper, all the Mexican, you know, spices that we need. We had to make it, every time we run out, we had to make a special trip down to L.A. where we had go up there just to see some our folks, you know. We got some cousins and nephews up in L.A., spent about 4 or 5 days with them. Same time, we buy everything up there. We buy tortillas and special meat that we need, you know. Put them on a big ice boxes, put some ice and tie them up, put them up in the top of the car and bring them in. You know.
So you couldn't even find much in Portland?
Couldn't find nothing. Nothing, not a damn thing up here. You know.
Well, now, you, I guess there were enough Hispanic people by say, the late 60s, so that there were...
The people started coming in about, we come in 62.
Right
after Columbus Day.
Oh, yeah, right after the storm, huh?
Yeah, after a storm. The storm was in October, and we come in June. You know, and the people start coming in until about 65, 66, something like that. We start helping people ourselves, because that's when we start to settle down people up here.
Was in 66 or thereabouts.
Yeah, something like that.
Now, around that same time, you, I guess they started started doing a Hispanic or a Spanish language mass at the church here.
Right along there, we had a, we used to have a missionary coming in from Mexico every year for the harvest season. I spent like 4 weeks in Woodburn, 4 weeks up here, 4 weeks in McMinnville, and then from here they moved on to Medford, and then from there they go to Mexico, back to Mexico. We didn't had a steady priest until 67. 67 or 68, something like that.
And was that Father Beezer?
Father Beezer, yeah, from a Jesuit high school. And we run into each other accidentally. You know, we had a friend, I had a friend in the hospital in Hillsborough. And this guy was real sick, you know, and I had to pass, it was his brother. You know, we was friends, but they don't let anybody else, just the immediate family, to see him. And I had to put my name as his brother. That was the only way I can get in. And I used to come into from work and stop at the hospital and spend 15, 20 minutes with him, then come home. And that evening, when I meet Father Bissard, I was going out from a room for Father Bissard to walking in. And he said, well, he said, hello. I said, nice to see you. Yeah, nice to see you too. He said, what is your name? I said, my name is Emilio Hernandez. He said, you're the guy that I'm looking for. He said, don't leave. He said, I don't want to talk to you. I said, my God. I said, what? He had two girls and two boys with him, some volunteers, and himself. And he said, "Well, here I am," he said. "See what you're gonna do with us." I said, "What you mean, what I'm doing with us, with you guys?" He said, "Yeah, I'm supposed to be your priest. Father Arnold Bissert. They said, "These are my helpers. And they sent us down here to help you." He said, "You got a house for us today?" I said, "I don't have a house, but I have rooms." I said, "Well, okay, if you want to live with us, I said, "You're welcome for a house." He said, "Anything's better than nothing." And they live upstairs for 4 months.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Him, the priest, and the four helpers.
Oh, yeah. They lived in this house?
In this house up there with us.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed there for about 4 months, and then we got him we ran a house for him.
No, this was before he was teaching at Jesuit?
No, after.
Oh, after, okay.
After he retired from the Jesuits.
Okay.
Oh, he was working in Jesuit high school.
Right.
When he came down here. Okay. But after he got the job down here for nothing, because we wasn't going to pay nothing, you know.
Oh, I see. So that's why he needed
he resigned up here.
And so since he wasn't getting paid, he needed a place to stay.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And he stayed down here, and we started working, you know, for the first 2 years. We didn't know if we were going to have some mass services on Sunday or not, or where.
Mm-hmm.
Because one Sunday, he used to make the service in Cornelius. The other Sunday, Forest Grove. The other Sunday, in Hillsboro. The other Sunday, in Gaston.
Mm-hmm.
And we were transits, you know. Until one day, you know, and then St. Anthony's up here in Fort Grove. They had a big gym just across the street from the church. And that's where we used to get together after. We started with two families and the mass. Then the next Sunday we had 15 families. And then that's the way they start going. My Father Bissi used to go on every day to visit some families.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a hard time, you know, because some families was watching TV and they didn't want them to be disturbed. And they see him because their Father Bissi was coming in, they closed the door and shut the lights off. Him and my wife and Annie and Junior was the ones that used to go every evening to visit some people and different in the house.
To visit people, you
think? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some would turn off their lights.
Yeah, but it was a real nice priest.
Uh-huh.
And then...
Now, when you were in Texas, were you pretty connected with the church down there?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it must have been something that was missing in your life once you came up
here.
Oh,
yeah. All my kids, they were through the Catholic Church, mm-hmm. except Annie and Junior.
Mm-hmm.
Annie was starting Catholic school up here in Fort Grove. But then they shut the school because it was I don't know if they didn't have no teachers or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't afford it, the teachers. But they had to shut down. That's when Annie got transferred, you know.
Out into the public school.
Right? Into a public school.
Mm-hmm.
My boy used to go to this school down here. Now it's the main office,
mm-hmm.
you know. Central school.
Well,
and then
so
we, uh-huh.
So when you first were getting Father Beezer's ministry started here, I take it was pretty important to you and some of the other families that were involved in that then, or?
real important, real important, you know, because we want to become a part of the community, mm-hmm. you know, and to be recognized as a part of the community.
Uh-huh.
No, not like a, I don't know what to call them. Not like a transit family, you know, that today we gonna be here, tomorrow we leave. Uh-huh. You know,
we want to be recognized as a permanent part
of the permanent part of the community. Mm-hmm. And then we start getting dialogues, you know, every Sunday after church. We move that to the gym. They claim, I don't know, but they claim if there was a high school. On those days, it was a high school house and that big gym.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And we start, you know, every Sunday getting together, and the people start coming in, you know. And said, Emilio, he said, Father B said, oh, we used to, after we got everything, you know, started controlling, he said, how are we going to get some money? I said, you just get the churches to help us, and we can cook some Mexican dinner for the people and the community. Introduce the Mexican dinners to the community. Father B said, what you think? I said, yeah, go ahead. I remember the first one was in Tiger, that church in Tiger. 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. He went up there and told him, and he said, yeah, go ahead. And we took everything up there and start cooking about 3 o'clock in the morning.
And who was cooking?
My wife. She was the main cook, yeah.
She was the main cook? Okay.
Yeah. And we start serving at 12 o'clock at noon. By 12 o'clock at noon, we had about a block and a half of people line. Huh. Yeah.
Mostly Hispanics or?
No, white.
Oh, yeah, okay.
No white people, yeah. Yeah, and we didn't know how much they charged. We were just like a donation for donation, you know, because we didn't know how much to charge. Mm-hmm. And Father Bisa was a treasurer and was the guy in charge of the money.
And you were raising money for what at that time?
We was raising money to for the needs of the club, of the movement. We didn't know what we were going to get after, you know. We started getting together, started talking together, and Father Bishop said, well, where are we going? We're going to form a club. It's going to be a religious club, going to be a family club, or what? Well, we didn't know. We'd keep talking.
And it grew out of these meetings that you had after church on Sunday then?
Yeah, uh-huh. We start talking after we... I said, how about let's go to get a club, you know, and... Okay, the next Sunday you guys bring the name of the club, each one. And from there we pick up the name. And that's where Centro Cultural come out.
Oh, yeah. So someone brought the name Centro Cultural?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Of Washington County. Mm-hmm. You know. At the same time we was organizing the church. You know. Mm-hmm. We were organizing both things at the same time.
Organizing the church to try to get a permanent...
Permanent resident for the church. Mm-hmm. Because that building up there, it was a building belongs to the city, I mean to the Forest Grove Catholic Church up there. Mm-hmm. And they used to go, the priest used to go up there twice. No, once every Sunday. You have one mass. And one day I told Father Beach, I said, let's go and see the bishop, see if they get, let us use Cornelius School. I mean, it's a church. They said, no, I don't think so. Let's go. He said, okay. We got up there, you know, and set up an appointment with him, and we talked to him and told him about it. And we didn't have no problem. He said, go ahead and take it. You know. And that's, he didn't give us any writing or anything. He just, go ahead, that's going to be a Mexican church. That's what he said. That's going to be a Mexican church. You know, the people that started spreading out the word, the church of Cornelius is going to be the Mexican church. We got all the American people in Cornelius against us.
Oh, yeah, they didn't like that
idea. They didn't like the ideas, giving the church to the Mexicans, because they didn't, the Mexicans didn't build the church. You know, there were folks who built the church. I said, well, it's okay. I said, we're not going to take it. I said, we are going to use it. Mm-hmm. I said, but that's going to be a Mexican. You use it, we use it. What's the difference? Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people pull out from our church.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Some of them went to Forest Grove, some of them went to Cornelia, to Hillsboro, some of them went to Beerboard, and everybody spread out. I said, what? And I started getting against me, because I was they claimed that I was a promoter of the whole damn deal. Huh. You know?
So the church lost some part of its white, mainstream congregation then?
Yeah.
How many people went away, would you say?
Well, it wasn't too many, just the farmers around Cornelius.
Uh-huh.
But they were pretty powerful people. Uh-huh. They were real powerful. And whenever they speak, the bishop, they would listen to them. Oh, yeah. We had a lot of problems with them, a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
You know. I had some real bad telephone calls up here. They sent me a real letter, dirty letters, you know, for what I was doing. So, in my conscience, I wasn't doing nothing wrong, because we can see it now, what I was doing, you know. And then we start with the Centro.
Uh-huh. So the church, though, never backed down. They stuck with you, huh?
That's right.
Uh-huh.
And they're still backing us up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but we've been trying to get some money to build a church, a bigger church, but we haven't been able to get all that money to build a church. Mm-hmm. They get a 6 o'clock mass, 10 o'clock, 9 o'clock mass, 10 o'clock mass, 10:30 mass, 1:30 mass, and 5:30 mass in that church. And they get one 1:30 up here in Cornelius, in Forest Grove, and again another one 11:30 in Cornelius, Hillsboro. Mm-hmm. You can see that many people, how many people there are here now.
All of these are Spanish masses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's besides the angled masses they have.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Uh-huh, there.
And so when you got these phone calls, what did people say to you?
Well, they were calling me a communist. You know, which, as a communist, here come my daughter, Annie.
Oh, I was just with her earlier today.
Yeah. You want to shut it off or leave it for you?
Sure, we can shut it off.
You know, even a lot of people, they tread me and my family on those days.
They did what now?
Treaded. You know, they were going to beat me up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, threaten you and the family,
yeah, oh,
okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But I told them, they send the FBIs to check me. They send the immigration
really?
to pick up my wife.
So, there was just these important families in Cornelius that managed to get the FBI after you, or how?
Yeah, well, people in Cornelius and people up here in Fort Scoville.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And FBI guy actually came out and visited you, or?
Yeah, he came. We had some couple. We had a couple of three FBI that came to check me.
Really? What did they check?
I don't know. They never tell me. Mm. You know. Even at the beginning, you know, when they called the bishop, you know, in Poland, they told him that the Mexicans was getting on a war pad up in Washington County. And the bishop got scared. And they sent some nuns and priests up here to check us, you know. I said, we are not doing nothing. Then they find out we had two priests from Spokane. We had nuns from one from LA, one from San Francisco. They come down here and stay with us just to find out what kind of people we were.
That's amazing.
It is. It was amazing.
Just because you were trying to get some Hispanic or Spanish-speaking masses going, that's all.
Yeah. And we would try to settle down the families. And I was working. We were working with the churches up here in the community. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they had those things against me, because we were working. We had a program with the churches, settle families through the church. You know, family comes in and want a place to stay or a place to live. We call the church, and the church will come in. And they compromise themselves to live with that family help that family for 3 months with the rent and everything they need, and then they compromise themselves to find them a job to the householder, and then at the end of the 3 months, turn them loose and get another one, mm-hmm. And we settle a lot of people that way, uh-huh. You know, because. But in some deals you find some good people, in some another ones you find some right people, you know. So a lot of families that were good families, and some of the families that were rotten too, you know.
Mm-hmm. You mean the ones that
settled, the one that settled, uh-huh. The one we settled, because we didn't know the people.
Right.
We never met them before. They just come down here and ask for some help. We help them out. And all those blames, they come on me, against me.
If a family turned out not to be so good, then they blame you.
Oh, yeah.
I assume the good families outnumbered the bad families, though.
Yeah. We had the sheriff, the judge up in Forest Grove. He called me every night. He said, Emilio, he said, I got a couple of guys up here, Emilio. I want you to come. I get up and go up there. I said, well. So where you going? Let him go. He said, his own reconnaissance. I said, okay. I used to tell my guys. I said, behave yourselves. 3 or 4 nights. Here you go again. The same guys for drunken driving.
And so it was the sheriff that was calling you, or
no, the judge.
The judge, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the judge was our neighbor up there.
Oh, okay. So you knew the judge.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, we knew their judge.
And so if you'd vouch for him, he'd let him go, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then we start with the Centro.
Right, and so tell me a little bit about that. So you decided originally it was going to be sort of a club for Mexicans to meet.
The Centro, we started talking, and then we decided to let the people bring the names of the Centro. I mean, the name of the club, what we were going to, and where we were talking about the Chore Ranch and the Long Ranch, mm-hmm. where we where we were standing and where we were going and what we were trying to do. And the next Sunday, you know, in next reunion, we decided to put $25 a family, you know, like a dues, mm-hmm. you know, to get some money to give to the father, basically to work, you know, to work around with him, because we didn't have no money.
Who were the families that were part of that earliest group?
Early group, Familia Morales, Familia Lira, Familia Hinojosa, Familia Hernandez, Familia Martinez, Familia Herrera, Herrera, Familia Pérez, three familias Pérez, diferentes Pérez. Familia Maciel. Familias Garzas. Can't remember the rest of it.
Trevino? Or was Trevino. That
Trevino.
Okay, Trevino.